It's Tuesday, December 1st. We have major COVID news in the NFL, rescheduling all around, Chiefs and Bucks reaction, and the Monday Night Football game was a clunker. We have reactions to all of it. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Gabe Goodwin. This is Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. Gabe will join us in just a second. Let's start off with the Monday Night Football game, which is just about to go final. It's 29 Seahawks. Eagles had a rough one. Carson Wentz, again, did not play well. And let's start with the Eagles, because I cannot recall a time in my 34 years that a quarterback that played as well as Carson Wentz did in 2017, the MVP year-ish they would have had, and then has declined so far to where when you watch him play, it's unrecognizable to the player that he used to be. And there's many reasons for this, and I'm going to go through all of them. One is that he got hurt, right? When he got hurt, it takes a little bit of time for quarterbacks to get back to playing like they used to. So that's a good start for where this went off the rails. The Eagles have had injuries. They have injuries at wide receiver, at offensive line, at running back. They've been injured for years now, right? So Carson has not been able to really get in a rhythm with any of the players around him. Three, the play calling has gotten worse and worse and worse as Frank Wright left, as John DeFilippo left, quarterback coach, and as Doug Peterson has taken over this offense, the play calling has gotten worse. It's all come to a head this season, where you have a quarterback in Carson Wentz who plays with no confidence whatsoever. The offense has no identity whatsoever. There's injuries on the offensive line again for the third or fourth year in a row. The offensive line is beat up. Wide receivers, tight ends, running backs, not on the same page as Carson Wentz. Eagles call a wide receiver screen behind a Seahawks pressure. Should have been a touchdown. Wide receiver doesn't do his job. So all these things keep piling up, right? Carson Wentz's confidence, his footwork, not playing well. Wide receivers, running backs, tight ends, not on the same page. Carson Wentz doesn't let the ball go. The blocking's bad on a play. The tight end misses a block. It's all a cluster. And that leads back to coaching, right? At the very end, coaching and your coach are in charge of making sure all these things are working. Yes, it doesn't mean that a coach can overcome a quarterback who's lost all his confidence, but it's a coach's job to try to build that confidence back up. It's a coach's job to make sure that your offense is functioning at a level that's somewhat competent, that your wide receiver knows it's a wide receiver screen, that your quarterback knows in man coverage, this is where you go. And none of this is what the Eagles are doing. And I don't know what the fix is other than deciding to move on from Doug Peterson. And again, I'm not advocating for the Chiefs, the Eagles to fire him. I like Doug. He was with the Chiefs when I was there as a quarterback OC guy. But there's no magic pill to make Carson better. They've tried to fix Carson Wentz, right? They've tried to do it, and it's just not working. So that was another example. Guys not on the same page. You know, Wentz throws a good ball, guy drops it, makes good play, this thing happens, a holding happens, this happens, right? It's third and 30. They throw a screen for minus 2 yards. They go for it when they shouldn't go for it. Kick a field goal, they shouldn't kick. It's just, it's a complete wreck right now. And the only fix is to fix the coaching. And I'm curious whether Doug Peterson is on the hot seat. We're talking about Jalen Hurts coming in tonight. Obviously, Jalen Hurts must have looked terrible in practice because he barely played tonight. Even one of the plays he had, third and two, they're running an RPO. He's got to pull the ball and throw the bubble screen. There's one defensive back over two wide receivers. That should be a bubble screen every time. Just Jalen Hurts didn't do it, didn't get yards. It's all these little things that keep adding up. This is what bad offenses are. Bad offenses, it's not just typically one guy in a bad offense, right? It's not just one. It can be. The Bears, for example, feel like one guy's holding back the quarterback position, right? But most often I've experienced when I've been on bad offenses, and it can definitely be the quarterback. I've had that happen before, Jimmy Clausen, Carolina. But a lot of times, though, it's a different guy screwing up every play, right? So it's the quarterback on this play, and then it's the wide receiver. Then it's the right guard. Then it's the running back. Then it's the quarterback. Then everything works well, but you have a penalty. And that's just coaching, right? It's getting into a rhythm, calling plays that work for your quarterback, for your offense, making sure you get quick, easy throws. Like, none of that really happens with the Eagles offense. And again, man, I hate to harp on this, but it's coaching, right? We blame other coaches in the same situation all the time. Like, it's coaching. You got to find ways to get completions out of your offense. You got to find ways to get easy throws. And Eagles don't really do that. They don't really do that. And then Carson Wentz doesn't play well, right? So it just compounds itself over and over again to where you're at, where it's, and this game's about to end. It's 20-9. I mean, Carson Wentz was what tonight? 14 of 35. Even then, that might be even generous. It looks like a guy. I can't recall a quarterback who has fallen this far so fast. I mean, Carson Wentz is 22 of 41 for 158. Like, it's just atrocious. It's so bad. I feel bad for Eagles fans because they're in a tough spot because no one's trading for Carson Wentz. He's too expensive to trade for. So you're stuck with him. So either you have to figure out this offseason, like have a come to Jesus meeting with Howie Roseman, Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, and Doug Peterson, and figure out a plan to make this work. Or you have to get a new coach and hope the new coach can make Carson Wentz work because Carson Wentz is there. His contract is untradeable. Like, if you're the Bears, you need a quarterback, or the Colts, you need a quarterback. You're not paying $35+ million for Carson Wentz. It's not worth it. Go get Sam Darnold. Go get someone else. You're not paying all the money for a guy who's not very good right now. And coaches are going to say, I can't fix this guy. He's too far gone. The Eagles are in a tough spot. And again, I go back to coaching, man. It feels like coaching has got to be the reason that this is all going bad. Again, does not take away personal responsibility for Carson Wentz. But again, it's the whole operation is not doing a good job in Philly. And Seattle, look, Seattle played okay, I guess, enough to win tonight, 23-9. There's times when they look really good and really bad offensively. Like, they had this let Russ Cook thing going for a while, and then it feels like the last couple of weeks as the season's gone longer, Pete Carroll's pulled some of that back, right? They're not doing some of that right now. DK Metcalf is unbelievable. Some of the decision-making process on some of these plays with Seattle is not ideal. But look, they're in the hunt. Their defense is starting to play a little bit better. Their defense can pick it up. The Packers' defense, like, those are legitimate contenders in the NFC. Not much on the Seattle side. I wish I had a better recap. They just kind of meh. All right, guys, let's get to the COVID news. There's so much of it. We recorded this before the Steelers game was moved to Wednesday at 3:40 p.m. They're playing a Wednesday mid-afternoon game, Baltimore and Pittsburgh. The NFL is going to do whatever they can to cram this game in the schedule. They do not want to go to a week 18. So we'll talk about all of that and more with Gabe. Here we go. All right, let's welcome in Gabe. Gabe, how was your Thanksgiving? It was, it feels like a long time ago Thursday now.
Yeah, I mean, I got to watch a little football. It was a weird Thanksgiving for probably everyone listening to this show, but everyone's healthy and happy, so no complaints. But football was weird, man. And the Washington football team, we'll get to them, but I guess we have to keep talking about them.
The 4-7 division lead New York Giants, who may or may not be without a quarterback for a couple of weeks. Reports were that it's better than maybe assumed, but hamstrings are never great. And there's COVID, there's college football. The Big Ten is an absolute mess right now. Kind of ironic how people wanted to bring that conference back so quickly, and they're a wreck. The Pac-12, everything's a wreck. But guess what, Gabe? We have yet to have an NFL game canceled.
We have yet to have one canceled, assuming they play tonight. They're playing a Tuesday night game between the Ravens and Steelers because of a massive COVID outbreak in Baltimore. Steelers have had some issues too, but it's mainly a Baltimore thing. We know the Broncos played without an NFL quarterback on Sunday. That did not go so well. We'll get into the differences between those situations, but basically the Broncos just didn't have anyone who was allowed to play. It wasn't an outbreak issue. College football, you mentioned it. I mean, two of the top teams out there, their coaches are out with COVID. Every team seems impacted by it. The conferences can't play games. We don't know who's going to be eligible. Jeff, I got to say this, because you played the game and you have the mindset of a player. And I swear to you, I'm not trying to troll you, and I'm not trying to be insensitive to people who are dealing with this thing. But it's starting to feel like football players in general, pro and amateur, are just not taking this thing as seriously as a lot of us. And I don't know if that's fair to say, but that's what it looks like. There's a lot of positive tests or guys who are not doing the right thing with protocols. And it feels kind of like a football culture thing to me, being honest.
Yeah, well, I could get how people would say something like that. I do think there is some truth on the college side. I feel like some college programs, once their season has been determined, it's not going to be good. They're kind of just have a bunch of tests, right? Guys are going out. They're not doing the right thing. They're coming to the facility. It's being spread. But on the NFL side, I think it's a little different, right? The NFL chief medical officer came out a couple weeks ago and said, look, we've tracked all the spread in the facility, and most of the time, it's not actually spread within the facility. It's players offsite getting it, whether via going out, which they're not really allowed to do, or whether it's from family, whatever the reason is. This week, though, felt like it finally came to a critical situation for the NFL, right? We've had little tiny wildfires, right? And then we've had big, huge fires, right? The Titans were a big, huge fire. The Ravens are a big, huge fire. The Broncos, tiny wildfire that got contained very quickly. And those are two different situations. The Broncos had one quarterback of the four on their roster test positive for COVID. The NFL protocols, and they change every week, right? The new protocol said, and this is what actually has always been, but wear your mask at all times, okay? At all times. And remember, they're wearing tracking devices, not literally on the heart, but they're wearing tracking devices that track where they are. There's cameras all over the facility that the NFL and NFLPA can review to see if players and coaches are following protocols. It comes out that the Denver quarterbacks were not wearing a mask and were within 6 feet of the positive quarterback. That, therefore, the players had to quarantine for 5 days. Those are the NFL rules. If you had just worn your mask in the meeting room, you would be able to play this weekend. And I think the NFL made the Broncos play on Sunday against the Saints for a couple reasons. One, it was a tiny wildfire. It was a contained outbreak, right? It was just in the quarterback room and really just one guy so far. So they made him play. It's not the Ravens, not 23 guys, 21 guys on the COVID list. One player plus three quarterbacks. Right? So four total quarterbacks on that list. And then they were showing a lesson to the rest of the NFL, Gabe. Like, look, if you're going to not follow the protocols that we have put in place, we're going to punish you by making you play a game with no quarterback. The Ravens are different, obviously, right? So the Ravens have a full-blown outbreak, a huge wildfire through their building of COVID. Reports were that it was an assistant strength coach who wasn't wearing a mask, who wasn't distancing, who had symptoms but did not report them. That's reckless, right? If that's true. Again, we don't know if that's true. And yeah, in that situation, I kind of would agree with you, right? It's someone who's not taking it seriously. Someone that's not taking the protocol seriously. But you kind of notice how the best teams in the NFL right now, the Chiefs, the Steelers, the Seahawks, the Packers, they might have a couple guys here and there, Gabe, but that's it, right? They're following the protocols. So I think sometimes it's maybe more to do with, especially in the college side, more in the pro side, like the winning and losing, right? It's like, if we're losing, like, I'm going to enjoy my life. I'm not going to be pent up and not do anything. If you're winning, you're more focused, especially in the facility of getting it done. But also, look, in some of these places, you have the right people in place that can override a head coach or override a general manager, right? Some places, the general manager is kind of running the show. The head coach running the show. The medical department is really not running the show. So there's different things involved here in the NFL. But for the most part, they've done a good job. We'll see if the game plays tonight. Obviously, it's not fair to Ravens, but this year, Gabe, was never going to be fair, right? We're never, ever going to be fair. So if you're one of the people who's like, well, it's unfair. It is unfair. You're right. But this was never going to be a fair season.
Well, the team that's had the most unfair situation all along is still the best team in football, which is the Steelers. They've been jerked around more than anyone.
Okay. Okay. I was the best record, you mean. I was just making sure we were on the same page.
Jeff, save it, because we're going to get to all that. But yeah, the team with the best record has also been the team that's been jerked around by this the most. But I want to clarify one thing that I said, because I actually think that the Broncos example and many college programs examples are more of what I mean about guys not taking this seriously. Everyone has the ability to wear a mask and follow some basic rules. Obviously, luck plays a part in this, and we don't all understand this disease as well as we like to think we do. So that's why I'm not as questioning of what's going on in Baltimore. Stuff maybe just happens. I might get it. It just happens. But the Broncos quarterbacks and some head coaches that we know of seem like they just didn't do what they were supposed to do. And that's the part that I'm wondering if there's more going on behind the scenes than we fans typically realize.
Okay, look. there's 53 players on a team, plus how many practice squad guys are on a team this year, 70 guys, plus coaches, plus everyone else. Same as the country, I'd imagine that some players don't take it very seriously. There are people around the country that don't take COVID very seriously still. And so it does not surprise me when the NFL players resemble the rest of the country, right?
Okay.
There are players that vote for every candidate. There's players that believe this and that. So it doesn't surprise me that there are players that don't follow protocols. I mean, it shouldn't surprise anyone else, but I get it because it's in a business where your goal is to play every week. It's a way you get paid. And Vic Fangio, the head coach of the Broncos, called out these players, called the quarterback room. He said, it's their fault they're not playing. And he's right. They didn't follow the rules. And it is their fault. And the burden of – now, the Broncos are not in the playoff hunt, but can you imagine if they were in the playoff hunt and the quarterbacks didn't wear their masks, which, again, very simple to do, right? They're all wearing gaiters. Just pull them up right here. You know, just wear them in the meeting room. We can all breathe in them. Don't give me that crap. You can't breathe in them. You're in the meeting room. You're taking your notes. You're watching the film. And you're wearing a mask and you get to play. Imagine they're in a playoff situation or down the stretch of the season and they need to win a game and the quarterbacks are irresponsible. NFL players, for the most part, don't want to be that guy. Don't want to be that guy. So again, I think it comes down to a lot of like where we are with the winning and losing part of the season. Now, the Broncos aren't a playoff team. I get that. And maybe that's the reason why they were more lax. You got to ask them like, hey, Drew Locke, man, like, why don't you wear your mask? I don't have a great answer for you. But I know the best teams in the NFL, they're doing their job. They're wearing their mask and they're keeping their players as healthy as possible.
Okay. Well, it's just weird then that the top college programs out there, the leaders of those teams are getting this thing. And
I look, the coaching stuff, man, like coaches. And what's, you know, the thing about Nick Saban, though, is Nick Saban has been a guy who's been on the forefront of wearing a mask. Like he's been one of the few coaches who's been great about it. And look, you know, we don't know if a spouse brought it home, a child brought it home. Like, we don't know all these things. So and the thing about, you know, Nick Saban or Ryan Day getting COVID to me is interesting because coaches don't really do anything during the season. They just go from the facility to home and back. So it might be someone in their family, honestly. Like, I don't know if it's from doing things they shouldn't be doing because during the season, they don't do anything. There's no booster meetings now. Imagine if Nick Saban were to go eat out on Saturday night. Tuesday night. They all take pictures of him. Like, he can't go anywhere.
Right.
So I'm curious about where those coaches end up getting COVID because I don't really know where that would be.
Well, okay. And like I said, I wasn't bringing this up because I'm looking to, like, criticize any specific person. We don't know the scenario. It just seems like, in general, football players are getting this thing more often than I would have expected. So let me ask you this,
I think on some teams they are, but I think other teams, it's like I said, it's been done well. I mean, look, the harsh reality is we're playing in the middle of a pandemic, man. Like, we have no bubble, and we're continuing to play, and we're finding ways to get it done. Where the protocols need to keep changing. I mean, it's working. Like, it's in the end, so far through week 12. Now, of course, we're recording this before the Steelers and Ravens play, and that game might be pushed. We've yet to have a cancellation. Like, it is as bad as it looks at times, it is still working. Colleges have cancellations, multiple tens of them each week now.
Yeah, there's no football happening on Saturday in any reliable way. You look up and your team's canceled. I mean, it's totally unpredictable. So let's go to something you just mentioned, and then we'll move to the next topic. The idea of a local bubble in the postseason. The idea that we've run out of any sort of pad that we had in the schedule. So it's kind of like, it's going to get a lot trickier for the NFL to keep things going if teams keep getting outbreaks. So what should the league be considering in order to get to the playoffs and have some kind of a tournament, even if it's different than usual? Because it seems like we might miss our chance. If they don't come up with some plans this week, we could be looking at mass cancellations in a couple weeks. That's the fear.
I think NFL teams might just independently bubble for the playoffs. Like, just say, like, the Chiefs say, hey, man, it's we want to win this title again. We're going to hotel for a month. And one of the reasons that I pushed back on the idea of an NFL bubble for the season was it's a long season, right? And as soon as you start losing, you don't want to be part of that bubble. Why would a Jets player right now want to be stuck in a bubble in Florham Park, you know, in New Jersey, right? Like, no, you don't want that, right? And the NBA bubble worked. One is that people were playing for the playoffs, right? It was the postseason bubble. that when you get in the playoffs, you have a chance to win now. Now, of course, look, an 8 seed's not probably not going to win, but you get to play playoff games, and if you lose in a week, you're out. Well, for the NFL, a postseason bubble is 5 weeks at the most, right? Or 4 weeks at the most. So you have a 5 weeks, right? So you have the first three rounds, a week off, and the Super Bowl, which, again, I don't think the Super Bowl will be – there won't be like a big week of festivities. I think they'll just fly in on Friday or Saturday, play the game, and go home like a normal game. It's not going to be a radio row and parties and everything. Now, it is in Tampa. Who knows if
– Yeah, that can knows? Change it.
But we'll find out, obviously, as we get closer. So – I'm curious if that happens. But nonetheless, like for 5 weeks, hey, man, we've just won a Super Bowl. Like the Packers, the Packers, the Seahawks, like all these teams that think they have a chance to win, why won't you voluntarily go into a bubble for 4 or 5 weeks? Like that, I think, is something that might actually happen. We're not there yet. We still have a month away, and we'll see if they move in that direction. But it feels like that could be something the NFL either does or the teams just do it at a hotel anyways.
Well, that's interesting you bring it up, and it's going to be a segue to our next topic because it's teams that are – led by fanatically driven quarterbacks and coaches who, no matter how all the players might feel, if like Tom Brady and Bruce Arians think that's a good idea, you better believe that's happening. If Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid think we're all going to live in a, you know, like just like LeBron kind of forced things upon people in the NBA, the star players with the best coaches can make these little team bubbles happen. So I want to bring up two of those teams, the Chiefs and Bucks. That's what every other show is leading with today. This show is about analyzing the takes out there. So the takes are the same as they always are. Tom Brady is either being defended blindly by people who have always loved him, or people are crapping in his cornflakes. That's basically the whole summary of every show today. We can save some time on your Chiefs. We'll come back to them if you want. They're the best team out there. We know that.
Yeah.
Tom Brady and the Bucks, man, I don't know. And they're 7-5 now. They probably make the playoffs still because their schedule's easy. But I'm going to say this. Belichick at 5-6 after killing Kyler Murray this weekend looks like he'll do more in January than his boy Brady would.
Yeah. I know. It's wild. The Bucks schedule real quick is like Falcons twice and like the Lions and the Vikings. They'll win their next four games probably. So they'll be 11-5. But hey, did you know Tom Brady shook Pat Mahomes' hand after the game?
Oh, no
great,
kidding.
He's a great sport. Amazing sportsmanship. I was watching the game with my son and I was like, hey, do you see this game? Oh, Chiefs win. But look at Tom Brady. Look, you see him? See number 12 over there? You don't know who he is yet, but he shook the other guy's hand. Son, you see that? Like, see that? Oh, of course I didn't say that. Stop talking about sportsmanship and handshaking. Come on, guys. It's the stupidest thing we talk about is Tom Brady shaking hands. Who cares? All right, back to real stuff. I can't believe people say that to me. They tweet me. My
I
son,
see it. I love it.
It's just, Gabe, it is by far one of the weirdest things people are obsessed about. I know why Nick Wright's doing it. I get it. But like, it's just like.
Hold on. I'm one of those people, I think. I don't bother tweeting it at you. But I understand the mindset that a lot of fans have, which is, does this guy think he's better than them? Does this guy think the rules don't apply to him? Because
There's no rules. It's a non-mandatory handshake after a game. It's not a hockey line after a game.
He finds a way to do it with some people.
What? Because he goes and he talks to his friends. Like, if I'm playing a defensive lineman I know nothing about, okay? And let's say they end the game on offense. Yeah. Right? So I'm on the field. I might not go out to say hi to him. I might go talk to my other buddy on the offense line of the other team. Like I don't, there's no mandatory handshake of your opponent that has to happen. Like, he just goes out and talks to his friends, win or lose. If he loses, he's not friends with Jared Goff. He runs back inside. Like I think it's like the weirdest thing of all time. Who cares if he shakes hands? It's so odd. I don't get it.
Okay.
It's so non-mandatory.
He and 25-year-old Patrick Mahomes are best buds. They really know each other.
Yeah, they like each other. That's the reports this whole week. It was like they're. Do you remember Tom Brady after they beat the Chiefs? He went and sought him out at Arrowhead Stadium to talk to him after the game in 2018. All right, enough of that handshaking.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, get to whether or not they're a good team.
So Tony Romo, if you watch the broadcast, clearly Tom Brady had talked to Tony Romo, and Tony Romo was relaying Tom Brady's message about the offense the entire game. And one thing that Tony Romo kept saying is, it takes time. It takes time. It takes time. Well, Tony, it's end of week 12. The time is now for Tampa's offense to get going. Like, you can't just keep saying it takes time. Yeah, no shit it does. But we're through 3 months of the season. It's got to happen now. And it's not. It's not happening now. And there's many reasons for that. I know people hate when I defend Tom Brady and when Dan Orlovsky does and when I was and Tony Romo and everyone else is watching the game. But there's a major disconnect between what Tom is good at and what the offense does. And we all knew coming in the season that Bruce Arians likes to run a deep passing offense, take vertical chances. But that's not Tom's game. And I think Tom thought too, hey man, we'll find a medium, right? We'll take some shots, but we're also going to do play action pass, which Tom's really good at play action pass, and they don't ever run it in Tampa Bay. They have the second worst play action percentage in the NFL. Tom's great at short, quick passes. Does that look like Tampa Bay's offense? No. Now, Tom does miss a lot of deep balls. He's terrible at throwing deep passes. But he hasn't done that in 10 years, though. So why are you asking him to throw a bunch of deep passes? When I watch them play, there's no identity. There's nothing I can say on 3rd and 8, this is what they're going to do. I know what the Chiefs are going to do. I know Pat Mahomes will get it done. I know what routes they're going to call. I know who's going to be open. I know who they're going to target. There's a rhythm and flow to the Chiefs offense. There's nothing with Tampa Bay. I don't know how they're going to rotate their running backs. Are they going to run the ball today? Are they going to play action pass? Are they going to screen? Are they going to throw deep, throw short? They have no semblance of any balance whatsoever. So Tom is missing. That is true. But like most quarterbacks, he's a rhythm guy, right? You get a rhythm. And there's no rhythm in this offense. There's nothing whatsoever. So of course he's frustrated. Of course he went to his boy Tony Romo, and Tony Romo repeated a bunch of what he said. I think Tony saw this on film as well. I've seen it. I know Darren Lofsky talked about it a bunch. It's just, they're not going to figure it out. It's too late in the season to figure it out.
Well, and Shannon, who's one of the guys I trust most on all this stuff, was calling out Romo this morning and basically saying, like, yeah, if you listen to a guy like Romo, a quarterback, calling a game, talking about another quarterback, he's going to say that the receiver should be, Shaquille O'Neal's height and Usain Bolt's speed. Otherwise,
Tony said a lot of good things about the offense. That specific play where Brady overthrew Mike Evans by 1,000 yards, that was a bad time to defend Tom. That was a bad throw.
And so, but there's this constant defense of Tom. And this is what I bring up on here all the time. Like, look, man, he has the rings. Like, it doesn't matter if people critique him or not. He's obviously done it. But I don't understand why so much effort is put towards defending his screw-ups and why every other quarterback in the league, we know they throw balls that get picked off that aren't entirely on them. We know receivers run the wrong route. Tony Romo sure knows that a few guys have run the wrong route. But you know what? Those same guys make huge plays for you that make you look good. Like, why is Tom Brady allowed to crap all over everyone who doesn't do it exactly the way he was expecting? Why is that okay?
Why is it okay not to crap on Tom Brady?
No, why is it okay for Tom Brady to crap all over his receivers when they run the route just this much off and make him look bad?
Well, he's maniacal. He's so attention to detail oriented, right? But look, Bruce Arians also throws Tom under the bus all the time in the media. Like, it feels like it's tit for tat, right? I mean, Bruce Arians comes out and says, Tom didn't do this well, that well. And so he went to his boy Romo, and Romo went ahead and defended him on national television. It was very heavy, for Romo on that. But that one play was bad for him to do that, I felt like. Sure, you want to talk about the general offense, but that one play, he missed them. No matter where the ball, even if Mike Evans had broken back to where Romo wanted him to go, the ball was still 10 feet over his head. He wasn't catching that ball.
Yeah. All right, well, I brought it up partially just to piss you off, but I actually do want to bring it up for real. So Belichick bottled up Kyler Murray. Because suddenly Kyler doesn't look like the MVP. In fact, Belichick just sort of embarrassed him. And I hate to bring it up because I don't want to talk about the Patriots, but they're 5-6 and they're scheduled down the stretch. There's some winnable games in there. I don't think they're dead. Do we think that Bill Belichick, crazy maniacal person that he is, could find a way into the playoffs this year?
Dude, that was a weird game, man. Arizona dropped a touchdown pass. The next play, the ball went down to the 1-inch line. Next play gets stuffed on 4th down. And then it was the end of game situation. Kingsbury is like, will be weirdly aggressive and then not aggressive. If people paid more attention to the Arizona Cardinals, which again, no one really does. He's terrible at the end of games, like really bad at the end of games. I think people would pay attention more to that if people care about Arizona. But look, they won another game, and look, Cam Newton, did he even throw for 100 yards in that game? And pull up their schedule right now.
Impressive from the quarterback.
The Patriots are at Chargers. They're going to win that game because Anthony Lynn is the worst coach I've ever seen. It's just not good. He might be worse than Adam Gase. I have no idea. Because, you know, think about it. I said he might be worse than Adam Gase. People got upset. Anthony Lynn has like a playoff caliber roster. The Jets do not have a playoff caliber roster. Like Anthony Lynn, the team should be in the playoffs right now. Have you watched them play? Who? It's unbelievable. Okay, Chargers.
You can say he's the 31st ranked coach in the league. Just leave it there. Okay, I'm fine with that.
Fair enough. I will relent. Adam Gase is the worst. Anthony Lynn is not the second worst. Matt Patricia is the second worst. Okay, Anthony Lynn keeps climbing the charts. All right, at the Chargers, at the Rams, at the Dolphins, Bills, and Jets. So they're going to win this weekend. Then they have to go back to the West Coast. They might just stay out West. Actually, they probably can't now because of California's restrictions. Who knows what's going to happen there? You're looking at five. They have what? Five wins. You need at least 9 or 10, probably in the AFC, right? The Browns already have eight wins.
You're going to need 10.
Yeah, they're not going to. They're not going to win out.
They're not going to win out, but I think they go 4-1, and here's why. Even the games they shouldn't win, I think Bill Belichick is proving to us that he's only trying to coach against teams who somebody said he should, you know, is going to beat him. He's clearly not trying against every team every week. But he's got McVay. He's got a revenge sort of feeling there. He didn't like when McVay got love around that Super Bowl. He's got Flores, you know, his guy, who he wants to prove he's still better than. He's got that crazy loss against the Bills he needs to avenge. Cam fumbled on the winning drive. He's got to get revenge there. He could win the Jets week 17 without even trying.
Yeah.
Chargers, you just said he'll win next week without even trying.
Would it be funny, by the way, if he's out of the playoff hunt, let's say, would it be funny if week 17, to stick it to the Jets for like 20 years ago, he just tanks that game and the Jets win and don't get the first pick?
I said it when they played a few weeks ago that it would be the most Jets thing ever if they somehow beat the Patriots in that game. This was back when they still only had two wins and ended up losing the number one pick to the Patriots week 17 because Bill Belichick threw the game. That would just be the perfect summary of my whole life as a fan. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to go 4-1 down the stretch. I think they're going to sneak in.
Are you getting excited for Trevor Lawrence yet? Are you looking forward? You looking ahead?
Only if we get Eric Bieniemy. That's coming up in moving the line. Before we move off of this, we didn't even talk about the Chiefs. Chiefs won the game. It was closer than it should have been. Anything to think about with the Chiefs?
Yeah, they're just not putting away teams, and I don't have a great reason why. I need to go back and look at this. I tweeted it last night. Like, I don't know the reason why. It's not conservative play calling. They passed the ball all day yesterday. They only had like. Entering the 4 minute drive at the end of the game, they had 14 called runs. Like they don't run the ball very much. Look, the Hardman drop didn't help, or Mahomes threw it behind them. They both took blame for that. Andy Reid kicking a field goal in the first drive of the game at the 1 yard line didn't help. So they're just the games are closer than they should be, right? You look at that box score. Chiefs had over 500 yards on offense. You're like, they should be winning this game by more. I mean, they scored 17 points in the first quarter, only 10 the rest of the game. So, the turnover in the red zone, the three holding penalties in the last second to last drive of the game. It's like there's a lot of things that are adding up. It just, they got to find ways to put teams away. But I do think they're just, I said, you're like bored. Like they have nothing to play for right now. Of course, they have number one seed. And they know they're good enough to win the number one seed. But wait till January. Like let's see when it's time to win playoff games. If they're still in this, if they are, if I see the first playoff game and they're still in this kind of mode of like, just like squeaking by, if Tennessee rolls into town the way Tennessee's playing right now and the way Derrick Henry's running right now, and you play a little lackadaisical, how do you just turn on the third quarter of that game? You don't, right? So I think it's important that as the season goes on, the Chiefs should win out their schedule. I'll tell you what though, they go to Miami in 2 weeks. That's going to be really interesting because Miami is going to play hard the whole game. Miami's not good enough to win that game, but their defense might be. I'm really curious to see how that game goes. Back in Miami, back in Florida, be a little warm. That'd be a really fun game to watch. 2 weeks from now, just keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on that game. I'm curious to see how the Chiefs doing that in that game, offensively in that game.
Okay. Well, the star of the offense, at least Sunday, was Tyreek Hill. Insane stats. Won everyone their fantasy week.
Yeah, I
want to try something a little different here. I'm going to throw a few names at you. I want you to on the fly. Give me your top five receivers right now in the NFL. Just overall, I'm not qualifying it, just top five guys. Tyreek is in the conversation. I can mention guys like Devontae Adams, Keenan Allen. Maybe you want to mention a rookie like Justin Jefferson, new guy named like DK Metcalf. Who are your guys? Who's your top five?
Well, I think it's in again, I don't like doing like top five, like 1, 2, 3, or 4. I'll give you like a group of five guys.
Give me a Tyreek group of five, and then I'm going to put them in order.
Tyreek Hill is obviously in that group, right? There's no question about it. He's leading the NFL right now in receiving. By the way, Travis Kelce, second in the NFL in receiving. It's a tight end. I think obviously Davante Adams is up there. DeAndre Hopkins will come to mind. And then think of like, you know, is DK Metcalf up there yet?
I think so.
Like if he played in a different offense, the Chiefs offense, you tell me you don't have 1,000 yards yet. Like, I think he's probably up there. I got one more. Like, I would love to see like Allen Robinson in a real offense. I don't know if he's a top five guy yet. You know, Terry McLaurin, I feel like could be up there as well. Justin Jefferson, probably not yet. Keenan Allen. Like there's a lot of options for the top five.
Okay, so talk about Keenan Allen, because I feel like the headier, smarter, I'll just say it, nerdier football guys out there, of which you are a part of that group, always want to tell me about Keenan Allen running routes, never drops a ball, just like every quarterback's best friend. Is he really that good, or is it just that we don't know what else to say about him?
He's really that good. No one watched him because he plays on the Chargers. I think we'll have to watch him next year as they get better, but yeah, 1,000%. He's great. He runs routes. He catches the ball. Justin Herbert's been, dude, he's been so good. Oh, I'm so happy for him. People crapped on him through the draft process. But yeah, I think Keenan Allen might be the low end of the top five, but I definitely think he should be considered there. But I think that like you have a strong Davante Adams, Nuke, Tyreek Hill. Who else did I say? I keep forgetting my list now. DK, Allen Robinson. McLaurin, Diggs. I mean, there's a lot of guys in that top, but I think a lot of it too depends on who you're playing, like who's your quarterback, right? What offense are you in? Again, Allen Robinson, I think could be one of those guys, but he plays for the Bears.
Well, I mean, playing for the Bears seems like the kiss of death, and obviously Packers got him this weekend. Packers, I keep saying it, just keep an eye on them. They're going to be scary late in the playoffs. Let's move the line, shall we? Take a quick break, and then we'll do our over-under segment.
Let's do it, buddy.
All right, Jeff, we're back here with a little over-under game. None of these are real this week. I want to know the Jets' chances of going winless over-under the Steelers' chances of going undefeated. What's a bigger number?
So what you mean, what has the better odds of happening, you'd say?
Yeah, what's more likely to happen? Jets go winless, Steelers go undefeated.
Jets go winless.
Seems like an obvious answer. I mean, it's hard to win games in the NFL. Steelers have a test tonight. But the Jets are the Jets, and they could screw it up in ways that you described earlier.
The Steelers have the Ravens, Washington, who they'll beat. At Buffalo will be interesting. That's Sunday Night Football. The Bengals are Monday Night Football. They go at Bills, at Bengals, Monday Night Football. They'll beat the Bengals. Colts at home at Browns. Yeah, interesting. I bet the Jets winless.
It seems like the type of season that sets up for Steelers 14-0, and then because of the weirdness of the year, specifically for them and all the sort of extra they've had to do to get ready each week, that maybe they sort of mail it in those last 2 weeks against pretty good playoff teams they might face again, and they don't complete the perfect season.
Dude, one team has done it. Like, it's hard to complete a perfect season.
Yeah. Well, let's look at the other side of this. The crappy Jets, who will almost certainly go 0-16. That would mean everyone assumes they get Trevor Lawrence, assuming he still wants to come play in the NFL. What about your boy? Is this the chance? Could the Jets make the move for Eric Bieniemy? Could you put that mind with that arm and make the Chiefs of the future?
Would Eric Bieniemy want to go to the Jets if he has other offers, though? That's the question.
Big market, a few pieces you can work with, and the number one pick, I think it's an offer.
Anyone would love to get a coaching opportunity. Would love to have Trevor Lawrence. Like that's the piece of the pie here. That's what Joe Douglas, the general manager, I think remains. I think it's shown he's brought in talent, right? Becton, and he's done a good job of building what he can with the roster he has. So I think anyone would jump at the opportunity. I think he would work great there.
All right, let's move it along here. I want to know time spent watching Chiefs and Steelers tape in the coaching rooms of the following AFC teams. Are they starting to look ahead to the playoffs here, Jeffrey?
Well, the Titans. None of them are, but we can still have fun with this.
Just play with it, damn it. I need some way to ask you about these other playoff teams in the AFC. That's the best I could come up with. Titans, are they spending any time at all thinking about the Chiefs or Steelers yet?
Yeah, of course. This is the formula they used last year. I don't think it's enough again to be a rushing football team, but they're going to try to do the same thing again. Derrick Henry continues to get better as the season goes on.
Now, how is he getting better? No one in the league is surprised by him. Why is this still working? I don't get it.
It's hard to tackle him. He's a good football player. I think teams are fine with allowing rushing yards. When you allow rushing yards, it doesn't matter if you're winning the game. The problem is when the Colts are losing, you're just no way to come back.
Right. Okay. Well, that's the kind of hard hitting analysis you come to, Jeff Schwartz.
I don't have a great reason. He's
hard to tackle.
Good player.
All right. Browns, man, exactly what we said was going to happen has been happening in terms of the schedule. They're starting to get to that point where they have to start to say, this is our year. Do they spend any minutes thinking about the playoffs yet?
Well, they're thinking about them, but they are not going to do anything with Baker Mayfield as their quarterback. Have you watched Baker play? He is not a good quarterback, right? They're winning in spite of Baker Mayfield. They have a decision to make after the season what to do with them, because they have a really talented roster. Obviously have a good coaching staff. He ain't the guy, man.
So are you saying that there are a handful or more quarterbacks out there? Well, I guess you're saying there's a lot more than a handful in the NFL right now who could just swap in there for Baker and the Browns get even better.
Oh yeah. Yes.
So there's nothing to be said for just his ability to properly manage the existing offense and just accept smaller stats and win games.
I mean, that's the way to look at it if you don't want to win Super Bowls. I mean, shouldn't you want to have the best quarterback possible?
Yeah, but if having a great quarterback is not what's needed here.
He can't. He's not the guy. They know it. They game plan. They call plays knowing he's not the guy.
So if Ryan Tannehill just suddenly were on the Browns, you think they're a game better a year? Two games better a year?
Yes.
Okay. All right, the Bills. Can they start to think about the postseason?
It's a weird
soon?
Game. Are the Pats are still the three games behind or two games behind? Three, right?
They're the division. I think is basically the Bills.
The Dolphins
are
7-4. Yeah, yeah.
I said Bills.
Yeah, the Bills start thinking about the postseason. Yeah. Lost the Chiefs already. I don't think they're good enough quite yet to win a Super Bowl, but they can start thinking about the playoffs. Yeah.
Okay, and in that preparation for the playoffs, will they at any point be practicing Hail Mary defense?
Oh, man, twice in a row, right? Happened against Arizona and then against the Chargers. What a weird ending game situation. The Chargers down 10 with under 30 seconds left and no timeouts. They weren't going to win the game, but they could have covered, and they ran a fade. But the worst play was 3 seconds left in the game. Justin Herbert, they're in shotgun, right? They're in a passing formation. The offensive lineman, 2-point stances. Justin Herbert rushes up there, take a snap, and then does a QB sneak while his offensive line is pass protecting. I've never seen that before in my entire life.
Yeah. I don't like to pile on Lynn like you do, but the final 30 seconds of that game were proof that they have the right quarterback and they do not have the right people in charge. It just was a mess. It was a total mess. Anyway, the Bills don't seem to defend the Hail Mary well. That was the point here. We'll see if they can get better by the playoffs. Okay, fine. Let's talk about the Dolphins for a second. I've never seen a winning team with more of a quarterback controversy before. They don't know. They seem like they have two guys who they like. What are they supposed to do to be a playoff team with Tua and Fitz?
They're probably a fringe playoff team at the best, I feel like. They might be the seventh team by this all said and done. I don't think they're going to be in the they're going to sneak in at the minimum. I mean, look, they have Bengals will beat this weekend, Chiefs, Patriots, Raiders, Bills. I mean, they could go 1-4 to end the season.
Yeah, when you spell it out, I mean, they'd be lucky, frankly, to go 2-3, which might not be enough. So I guess maybe the Dolphins thing, we can just stop talking about them, because when you look at who they have left, it probably isn't going to happen. That was fun. All right, let's move to the NFC. I want to know games you expect these NFC teams to play in January, so in the postseason. We talked a little bit about them earlier, but let's just put a fine point on it. The Bucs, will they win past Wild Card Weekend, over under 1.5 games?
So right now, they go to Seattle in the opening round.
Okay.
As of right now, after week 12, I would say no. They would not get past wildcard weekend.
All right. I don't want to argue with you there because I think they're only because of the schedule are we going to see them in the playoffs. And I don't think they're winning more than a game there. Okay. DC, I have to ask. Can the football team win a game in the playoffs?
Well, they're not going to win the division. I would say no.
Okay.
Look at their schedule.
Can the NFC East division winner win a game in the playoffs?
No. Here's a question, though, Gabe. Let's say you are the AFC West, right? You're Seattle, Rams, and Cardinals. Okay. You're
NFC West. Yeah.
NFC West. All three are in right now. And one of those teams is probably going to end up being the wild card spot, the first wild card spot, the fifth seed. And maybe it's Tampa. It could be Tampa 11-5, either one. But if you're an NFC West team, would you rather be the fifth seed and go play the NFC East in week one of the playoffs in the wild card round? Then obviously you have to play the Packers or Saints. Or would you rather have the home game and play like Tampa in the wild card round? So home field advantage, not as important.
I think this year, I get what you're getting at. I think this year, you'd much rather play the significantly lesser team in their building than whatever home field advantage right. or the comforts of playing at home in the first round would be against a very good team.
Correct. Agreed.
Yeah. I think not that anyone's going to like tank those final weeks for that scenario, but if it works out that way, you got to feel pretty good about going on the road to play DC or Philly. All right. Yep. Let's talk. You mentioned the NFC West. Let's hit two more teams then that are currently in that I can't really tell. Kyler, is he gets in and then loses first round, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the Rams.
Remember,
they do show up for big games.
I don't understand the Rams, man. I remember I liked them to lose at least eight games this year, right? I liked them to be under their total for wins. They're at 7 now. Probably not going to happen, but. Man, I mean, they lost to a Niners team who has their number, but the Niners team, man, like they had like 11 guys in injured reserve. I don't really, or not more than that, right? Like 25 guys in injured reserve. The Rams just, something about them, I would bet against them on the road in a playoff game.
Okay. All right. So I think we kind of know who the elite teams in the NFC are at this point. And we think we know who's getting in.
Right? Saints, Packers, Seahawks.
That's basically it. Yeah. All right. We talked Baker earlier. Now I just want to play you a clip. Here, why don't we take a listen to this, and then I'll ask you the question.
Is noticing the same thing. First 100-yard game for Landry.
All right. Over under 8.5 out of 10, Jeff's trash talk rating for Baker Mayfield. The guy's pretty good
10.
At this.
It's fantastic. I love it. It's the only thing I liked about Baker Mayfield on Sunday. This is great. He said, that's cute. Guys, love it. The awareness. Did he throw an incompletion after that? Or do you know what?
It doesn't matter. Who cares?
Yeah. 10. Great job, Baker.
What? Let me just get us inside the line a little bit because it's weird this year. We're able to hear quarterbacks and linemen more.
At the line of scrimmage.
How much funny shit do you hear that we never heard on the broadcast in those positions? Like, is that a common thing for a quarterback to make a joke like that?
Common. I don't know if it's common, but. It is pretty funny when the defense does things like that and you're like, guys, like we're not jumping off sides. We know what you're doing. Like my favorite always is like when you call out a pressure and the defense thinks they're being really slick about it. And there's times that I've done it before. Hey guys, he's coming right here. And a guy can tell like visibly upset that I called out their pressure. It's really funny.
I think for all of us who can now suddenly hear these quarterbacks, it's fun to imagine that that's what it's always like and on every play. Because if there's a movie made, like that's what the quarterback would be like in the movie, just constantly talking shit.
Right.
But I'm guessing time is of the essence and usually you don't have the ability to make
it. You don't have time. But we saw Cam Newton do this before too, right? Again, one time it was really, really good. He didn't talk shit, but he was like, I know you're coming. And then he threw a touchdown pass. It was great.
Yeah, he called it out. Yeah, that was a great clip that got spread around from a couple of years ago. All right, let's move to the last one. This is definitely the dumbest portion of the show, but the thing everyone was talking about over the weekend were these crazy celebrity fights. I think Triller was a part of it and a part of distributing it, I mean. So over under 2.5 rounds, you could last in a ring versus Jake Paul. Your only goal is to last.
I don't know who this guy is. Who is Jake Paul?
Okay, he's the guy who murked Nate Robinson and just ended his life on Twitter forever. Nate may never come. I hope he's okay. He may never rejoin.
I just saw this clip ever so slightly. I don't even know what happened Saturday night. I'm not paying for pay-per-view boxing matches. Rounds I could last. What is it?
2.5 over under.
3-minute rounds or 2-minute rounds?
How many? Let's call them 3-minute rounds.
Dead. I'll be so tired.
You're just gassed, you think.
Never make it. I'll be so tired.
What's the now? If I want to try to train and box you, what's the way to take you down fastest? Just body shots? How am I
think you just make me run around and move. Make me move.
But you could just, you don't have to run around. You could just be like Tyson Fury.
My radio partner on Pac-12 is a UFC fighter. I should ask him the way he would do it. I think he said he would just punch me and stay away from me. He'd like punch and move, punch and move, punch and move.
Right. Well, this guy, unfortunately, Jake Paul's, I think he's not a small guy. He's not as big as you, but he's not a small guy. He's got some power. So he could get inside on you and really work you.
I mean, I never boxed before. I don't think I would do well. Especially not now. Now I'm just like doughy and soft.
All right. Well, then this question maybe is idiotic. I would like to know how much it would take for you to step in a ring for any amount of time with Mike Tyson, who also fought on Saturday night. He is now 50, I think, well, I want to say 57 years old, but he's still Iron Mike.
Oh, geez.
54, by the way.
He would just, for Mike. He age. Maybe when Tyson like is like 75, when he's like a walker, I'm like, I got him now. Because, dude, he still looked like he could punch.
Yeah, I think he can. So you're saying right now, if I say I'm going to give you a couple hundred grand, a lot of money, like life-changing money. But no, but hold on. It's just sitting in escrow. You can't change your mind. You don't know what's going to happen in his life. But the day Mike Tyson turns 75, you are agreeing to get in a ring with him for 200 grand.
Yes.
Okay. I'd go older, but I like what you're going at.
That's what I would do. I'd make that happen.
Okay. All right. Well, you should, next time they do one of these, you should tune in, Jeff. It was fun to watch.
It's so late at night, dude. I like my sleep. I like my college football. So it was never going to happen. Real quick, before we wrap up, I want to give a quick shout out to Sarah Fuller, who was the Vanderbilt kicker this weekend, because she obviously was their goalie on the women's soccer team that won the SEC championship, and Vanderbilt needed a kicker. Everyone's in isolation for a quarantine. They brought her in. She had one chance to kick because Vanderbilt's offense is so shitty. They didn't get into field goal range not once, not one time all game. Not even like in an end of game situation. They're down 41-0. They get into field goal range. She had one kickoff, perfect squib kick, down to 35. The expected people that were upset about this are the ones you'd expect to be upset about. It was Vanderbilt wanted to win the football game. They brought in the person they felt best could help them win a football game, and especially can make a field goal. You have to make a field. What if it came down to a field goal? What if Vanderbilt played their best game of their life? They're not going to have like the wide receiver do it or the quarterback. Or they brought in a kicker. Like, what is the big deal with letting her play in this game or letting her play this week? I just, the hand-wringing over this stuff to me is so, it's like people go out of their way to be angry about situations like this. I don't understand. Bravo to Sarah Fuller. I thought I'd make that very clear. I was very fun watching her play, and I hope that, you know, that she's a role model for my daughter. But she has to shake hands, though, because otherwise not a role model.
So you had me right up until the last part, Jeff. Obviously, it was awesome to see. I don't understand. I tweeted something like this. I don't understand. You can either not know or care who the Vanderbilt kicker is, male, female, or otherwise, or like get on board and be excited that this is new and different and progress. Like, you can't be upset about this. This is the silliest thing in the world to be upset about. It costs nobody anything, and it's only fun for a lot of people. Just enjoy it. I don't get why people get so angry about stuff.
Well, because their way of life is getting challenged, right? Like, their way of
what, being a kicker? Who out there has the lifelong dream of being a kicker, and some woman came and took their dream? Get the hell out of here with that. That's nobody's dream.
But it's more about the identity of football, right? Like the identity, and people, and no one's taking your identity of football away from you, right? Coaches want to win. Vanderbilt was 0-7. Do you think Derek Mason, who got fired, the head coach got fired, do you think that he thought to himself, you know what? I'm going to save my job by bringing in Sarah Fuller. She's going to say he wanted to win the football game.
Right. And also, you mentioned it. I mean, it's boring to talk these logistics over and over again, but I think a lot of people were intentionally missing the point. You can't just bring whoever in when you're on a college campus in this situation. Like, they knew that the person on campus had been through the right test. Like, they knew this was a safe and eligible person. That's part of why they did it.
I'm glad you brought up the eligible part, because she's been getting COVID tested because she was playing soccer. Like, that's important. Right. Like, you can't go to Vandy doesn't have a men's soccer team, but you even they had an intramural team. And the reason I bring this up is as we're going through this, Devin Fitzsimmons, their special teams coordinator. I think I played with Devin actually he was my special coordinator with the Lions. He said, they tried out other guys on the team that allegedly played soccer. Like, when they were six, it was brutal.
Right. Yeah. Guys, you're not as good at kicking a football as this young woman is, period. You're not. You're just not. Get over it.
So congratulations to her. That was fantastic. It was a lot of fun to watch. And we'll end there. Jeff Schwartz, a smile on you. Jeff Schwartz, Gabe Goodwin. Talk to you guys Thursday, where we will bet on gambling and try not to be as bad as we've been for a while. All right, guys, have a great couple of days. Talk to you guys later.